Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. This is the IT Babble podcast, episode 151, recorded live. Well, not maybe. It's always live when you record in the Indianapolis. The capital of the Hoosier State, Indiana. And I'm joined with my good friend, Tony DePrato. Tony, how are things in South Korea?
They're kind of cold. It was warm, but then it got cold again. It seems like the whole world is experiencing that problem.
Yeah, we definitely can relate here. In fact, there was a little bit of snowfall this evening, just a little bit. And here we are, April 6, 2018. We are definitely ready for some warmer weather. That's for sure. That's for sure. Whenever this global warming comes, I will welcome it with open arms.
Yeah, agreed. Good. Let's just get tropical.
So on today's show, we're going to talk about a Chrome extension, Kaizana. We're going to talk about tech support. Your post, Tony, tech support problems, apathy, and solutions by Tony DePrato. And solutions versus support, something that I'm thinking about. But of course, we're going to talk first about Apple's education event held on March 27th in Chicago, Illinois, where they unveiled, Tony, did they unveil the future of technology and education? What do you think? What did they unveil? How many products did they unveil that make everybody's life easier, from the student to the parent to the administrator to the teacher? What did they unveil?
I believe that the main product was a stylus for a cheaper iPad?
You were partially correct. They did not unveil a cheaper iPad. They unveiled a new iPad at the exact same price as the old iPad. And now it has stylus support. So you can buy education discount, $89 Apple stylus or a Logitech crayon for $49, which is only available, folks out there listening, only available to schools. You, the normal consumer, cannot purchase this product from Logitech. You have to be a school. That's it. And wow. they unveiled some their own LMS, their own learning management system, like Edmodo or Schoology, which is certainly going to be lacking behind those two leading products. They unveiled some newer ways to manage your devices, and they unveiled a more robust where multiple people can sign into one iPad. And that was about it. And that took an hour.
I mean, that's all good, but those are features they needed a long time ago. And I don't know, like I don't have a single student that I can think of that can do their work from grade 6 to 12 on an iPad.
No. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
They can barely do them if they have a Chromebook that they've checked out.
Interesting. So if you were a school,
like
go ahead.
I mean, barely. Sorry, I just want to qualify that, because almost all of the kids at some point in the week do something in class that involves editing images or audio and sometimes video. So like 60-70% of the kids. So if they get a Chromebook, they can do a lot. They can work on image editing stuff, but it's nowhere near the experience of having like an Apple computer or a Windows computer to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Definitely. So the whole big push of this event, obviously, was because they were the kind of the kings of education with the iPad. And then the Chromebook showed up, and in very short order, ate up all of their market. And now they're trying to get some of it back. Do you think this will achieve that goal? Do you think the schools will be like, hey, let's go to iPads and get rid of Chromebooks? Or let's choose iPads over Chromebooks. Or what? Do you think that will happen?
I don't know. Like, if a school is just all Chromebook, maybe. Only because they may be using only like Google Apps and you know, the iPad does have a lot of apps.
Yeah.
So if schools are all Chromebook, it's possible. I think if schools were iPad schools, they're all in, they're just going to, you know, they'll update. I do think having the multiple sign-in is fine if you're doing shared devices. But if you set up a one-to-one program, so think about this. It's like Apple didn't have iPads that you could sign into. So they were like, for years, they've been like, no, it's a one-to-one device. So what do schools do? They planned one-to-one programs.
Yeah.
What are you going to do now? Hey, guess what? We can dump our one-to-one program and go to a shared iPad program. I'm just like, a little too late.
Oh, it's really
for a lot of that.
That's one thing that's great about the Chromebook. And coming from a middle school perspective, a middle school teacher, where kids aren't really doing serious audio or video editing or image manipulation or editing or creation, a Chromebook, any student can pick it up and can sign in with their own ID. Yeah. And all of a sudden it's there. They have a little tile. They can easily sign back in. But for the iPad, it has to be set up ahead of time. So you can say, oh, grade six, here are all the grade six people. And you can load them all in. And so when the kid picks up an iPad and it's a grade six iPad, they can pick their name and type in their password. But it has to be set up ahead of time, whereas a Chromebook, people can just sign into it. You know, there's no prep ahead of time for it. It's just there and it works and it's nice.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting. A lot of the tech blogs who have been talking about this, the very first day they kind of dismissed it as an education push from Apple, and immediately started talking about the new iPad as a consumer product, which it is. I mean, you and I can both go out there and buy a new iPad, but there's been no talk after the first day or two of this as a real educational device. And I think that speaks a lot. And then when you read the comments of all these blogs, and I'm talking like Mac Rumors, these are diehard Apple fans, and they're reading and they watch the live stream, well, the live stream for various blogs, and saw it, you know, what they offered, you know, minute by minute. And even they are saying, you know what? One person set it up nicely, said, you know what? This feels like just a push to sell more iPads. This doesn't seem like a real push into education. It's just like, buy this from us. Oh, you bought an iPad? Well, you might as well buy the pencil now that we support it. That's next. Oh, you know what? You should probably get this rugged keyboard case, which is another $100. It's just buying more and more and more into the Apple ecosystem. And I just don't know if that's the way to go in the future. And I, yeah, Tony, as you know, love Apple. I do really do like them.
But on top of this, guess what I read this week on Flashdot, which I didn't put on the agenda.
Okay.
Because I haven't looked into it enough. Apple's going to start making their own processors again. They're going to dump Intel by 2020.
Oh, that I can believe. That I can believe.
And I read that one of the reasons is so they can achieve their... I'll see if I can find the name. Hold on. Just give me a second.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. I mean, this makes a lot of sense, though, because there's been rumors for years, and we've talked about it on IT Babble and even written about it a little bit, of the Apple Mac OS, which is their desktop.
It is. Yeah, sorry. From Bloomberg.
Oh, from Bloomberg.
The initiative. The initiative. Codenamed Kalamata.
No.
To make all Apple devices, including Macs, iPhones, and iPads, work in a similar and seamlessly together.
Oh.
Do you remember that ridiculous video like 8 or 10 years ago where they put the iPod Touch wheel on the Apple laptop?
Oh, yes. Yes. I do remember.
So
that.
I'm just like, what? What's going on? Like, I don't know. It just worries me. That means probably no more Windows support, right, on Apple.
It could very well be. Yeah. Yeah. That could very, very well be. Yeah, because Windows would have to create a brand new version just to run on that chipset. Brand new architecture, I imagine.
Yeah. And I doubt they're going to do that.
Yeah, so no boot camp. Maybe you could run it in like VirtualBox or Parallels, Maybe. Oh my gosh.
But, yeah. Yeah. So now I'm thinking, after this year, do we keep buying Apple? And I talked to somebody, I talked to this guy who he's a scheduling expert, and he visits over 100 schools a year between the United States and international clients.
Wow.
And I asked him what schools he's been to recently that have dropped Apple. He said, like, the American school in Brussels, the big one, he said they're all on Lenovo. Luxembourg, they're all on Lenovo. Like, a lot of people are dropping it across the board.
Wow.
I know those are...
Go ahead. Well, Apple event, what I was really hoping for were for lower-cost MacBook Airs and lower-cost MacBooks. You know, something that and I'm not talking about huge lower costs. I'm talking about like $100, $150 lower than what they are, to where I could possibly justify buying a cart of them, or you know, saying, wow, this, we can continue with this product in the future. But I don't know. It just, I'm a little weird. I'm a little worried that we could have a big shift coming in our next, 2 to 3 years, going from Apple, because we are an Apple school, to more Windows, which is a lot more, I never thought I'd say this, but Windows seems to be a lot more open now than Mac is right now.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's all looping back to 1985 until Steve Jobs returned.
And they will. They'll bring him back. He'll be the new Siri. They'll call it Jobs. Jobs will be on your phone.
That'll be creepy.
That'll be pretty awful.
All right. Well, the Apple talk's depressing me. What do we got?
Let's get out of here. But first, I'm sorry. I'm taking that. I found that link on Slashdot, and I'm putting it in the show notes, which, of course, you, the happy listener, can find. And click on and open up and read on for yourself. Next, I want to talk about a Chrome extension, Tony, that I think it's a good Chrome extension. I think it's kind of an important Chrome extension. It's called Kaizana. It's not a new one. It's been out for quite a while, but they've refined it quite a bit since it first opened. And it is a way for a person, it doesn't have to be a teacher or anybody really, to give feedback off a Google Doc. Google Docs has a built-in commenting system, right? So you can leave comments, people can reply to them, so it has their own little thread, their own little discussion. But Kaizana is a little bit different in the sense that you can give audio feedback, like you can record yourself speaking about a particular part. Now, there are some limitations. You only get a 30-second record, but you can have as many of them as you want. And you have some other neat features there, too. I wrote about this a little bit recently. And I'll be sure to link to that in the show notes here. You know what? I'm just going to put my latest one here. And it's just, it's really kind of neat. Of what you can do with it, because it's quite powerful. And as you know, Tony, you're an educator. You've got a class coming in actually just a few minutes, I believe, right?
About a half an hour, yeah.
Yeah. So giving feedback to your students is very. I think it's one of the most important things that a teacher does. You know, rather than just put a red X on a question and hand it back. But sitting there and talking to them or giving them some feedback about why they got the question incorrect or what was incorrect about the question or how they can make the question, how they can make their answer better, I think is really, really important. It's something that a lot of teachers have difficulty doing, especially in a digital age. And I think Kaizana solves that problem. And I think it's a real problem, and they do a very good job of solving it. And on top of all of that, it's free. So... I don't know. Have you ever tried Kaizana or used it or anything like that?
No, but I'm gonna send it off to the English department right now.
I think you should. I really it's fantastic.
So this is what I've tried.
All right.
In China, we because Turnitin actually worked in China. But Turnitin had a feedback system. It was all right, but you could only do a total of like 2 or 3 minutes of recording per paper, which was a little weird. It's hard for people to keep track of. So, like, you know, people just wouldn't do it because you don't need a lot of feedback at one time. You need a lot of blurbs through the whole document.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm willing to give it a shot. I have the kids do every project I do with my middle school kids, especially. I have them do a self-assessment and feedback form for everything. So I think it's really important. I usually have, like today, they had a scratch project and they go through the Google, it's like a Google Doc. They go through it and they put in, like, they actually score they use the rubric and give themselves a score, and they write what they liked about the project, what they didn't like, what they think we should do next, just advice for making changes to the project in the future, if they thought it was appropriate for their grade level or if it was too hard or too easy. I have them do all that stuff. High school kids, though, I have them write a lot more. And I had some kids the other day, 3 kids actually, they had to write, it was about 3 paragraphs. Each paragraph was worth like 5 points or 3 points or something like that. I can't remember. But anyway, it's like a 3-point paragraph is worth what, it's not as much as like a 5-point paragraph. And I'm trying to teach them, so when they take tests, like they take an AP test or whatever, that you need to pay attention to the points because that tells you about how much you need to write. And in the language, like explain, list, etc. And they literally answered every single question with like 2 words. So I had to email each one of those kids and comment on each thing that they didn't answer and say, you need to do this, this, and this. It would have been a lot faster to pop it up like this and do it.
Yeah, and here's what's great about Kaizana. So you can, what you do is you're looking at their Google Doc, right? So it has to be a Google Doc. That's the one limitation. It can't be a Word document. It can't be a LibreOffice or text document. It has to be on Google Docs. You highlight what you want, and then you can add a comment. Now, the comment can be a text comment, so you can actually type it in. You can voice record yourself saying, okay, so here's what's the problem with this sentence or this paragraph, blah, 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 blah. Or they even have something where you can – it's kind of crazy. Let me see. I'm actually going to open this up right now because our show notes here are on Google Docs, folks. So you can make a, you can track a skill, and that's kind of like a, that's kind of like a rubric almost. So you can put a skill on there, like introductory paragraph, and you can give it like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 points, and you can give them, you're like, hey, you got 4 points on this. And then you can give them another comment on that saying, you got 4 points on your introductory paragraph. Here's the one thing you're missing. So it's very focused, and it gives them feedback and even quantitative feedback if you want to even go that far, which is really cool. And I think that's fantastic about Kaizana. I think it gives you lots of options. And they just released, I think last week, they just released the ability to resolve comments. So I can give a comment, my student can give comments back, and then eventually when we think everything has been fixed, I can resolve it or the student can resolve it, and the comment disappears. It doesn't go away into the ether. You can bring that comment back, but it disappears from the active comments, so they know what to focus on next, so they're not distracted by anything else, which I think is really, 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 really nice. So I like Kaizana, man. I think you should definitely try it out with your English department for sure. I'm certainly going to be pitching it to my my middle school and lower school as well, because I think it'll save them quite a bit of time, and it'll give them a track of what comments were received by the students, you know, that they can see and hear, and I think it's great. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. Feedback is good. Feedback is very good and important and part of the learning process. But, and like you put it, Tony, both ways. So not just the teacher giving feedback to students, but the students also giving feedback back to the teacher. I think that's good stuff.
It's great. Yeah. I'm gonna try it out. I just loaded it in, so I'll come up with a project for next week and do it.
Ah, nice. Yeah. I think this is I think this is a real winner. I think this is one of those Chrome extensions that just needs to be there, that people just need to use. It's been around for quite a few years. It's been free. I don't know if they have a paid version or not. I don't know if they do. Let me see here. When I look on their website, I don't see anything about a paid version. There might be, I don't know. No, I don't see anything for an upgrade anywhere.
I'm looking to see if this thing will work on the tech support form. That might be pretty awesome. I'll work on that later.
That might be pretty cool. And that brings us to our next topic, Tony. Nice segue, sir. Nice segue indeed.
You're welcome.
So you wrote a post, Tech Support Problems, Apathy, and Solutions. And it's a short post, but I think it's quite important. So do you want to talk a little bit about it? I read it, I thought it was quite good, and I've got some thoughts of my own.
So I was in a tech director forum, and there was a job posted at a pretty, I would say, pretty prestigious school in the United States. I'm not going to throw it out. And I was really surprised because of all the things they listed that needed to happen for the new director of technology, improving tech support, improving relationship between tech support staff and faculty, and overall support for like students in the BYOD program, et cetera. Those were mentioned like three or four times in this job description. They were at the top. And I thought that was really strange. Like 2018, shouldn't it be like, I don't know, connecting more cloud services, developing a more like seamless integration? I'm not really sure, but I wouldn't have put tech support up there. I mean, I can say that over the years, most of the stuff we get, pretty reliable. I don't, it's not like it used to be.
Yeah, that's true.
So
Yeah, definitely true.
I was just, I was reading through that, and I started remembering that there was another post recently in a technology director group at the state level in the US that I belong to in Kentucky. And I went through that, and they just had like a massive conversation about licensing IT support systems. And these are like public schools. Okay. It's like a public school. I kind of know some of these schools, like how many kids are in there and teachers. And I'm like, why do you need a license in IT support system? This doesn't make any sense. Like, how much of a problem, are you having? What's causing it? So, So I don't know. I just started thinking about it, and I started thinking about how over time I like kind of came up with like a philosophy for doing this stuff. And I mean, I don't know. I got it working pretty well in the UAE, and I refined it further in China and built multiple kind of versions of it in China for different things, IT, events, just all kinds of little. It's built around the same concept, but the forms and the way they work are a little different. And then, here in Korea, and one of the goals I always have is just not to spend any money on it. Like, I think it's completely doable in a school for free. Like, I don't think you should spend any money on it at all. If you have Google Apps or Office 365, you just don't need to spend money on it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of work you need to do to get it to work correctly. I mean, on my Google Apps tech support, I'm actually using custom scripts on it. I did research, put some scripts in this form, and it does a lot of sweet stuff. Like, I can assign someone on the IT team to a problem. I can track the problem, and when it's completed, I can send a user a status email. It automatically tells you when you complete a form what number you are in the queue. Like, there's like eight requests ahead of you. And that actually has turned out to be something I didn't have before, and now I'm always going to include it because it just makes people feel better. They're like, oh, okay, well, the IT department's not busy today. Or, hey, there's like 10 people ahead of me, but they'll wait. Most people will wait. Like,
Yeah.
they understand that we're not just, sitting around doing nothing.
Hey, do you mind when you get do you mind putting that link to that? That's very interesting, 'cause I knew there was a like a help a ticket support system with Google Apps, but the one that I had seen was it was quite a few years ago, and it wasn't so robust. It just didn't quite meet the needs that we needed. I think it would be very helpful for a lot of people out there.
I'm going to copy it now. I've added some stuff to it, and I'm happy to go over this with people. I'm going to paste it in the document. Oh, not like that.
No. I know for my school, now my school is a smaller school than where you teach, Tony. We have 400 some students, whereas you have well over 1,000.
Oh. Not right now. Right now we're not there yet.
Yeah, but
it's a new school, so we only have like 400.
Yeah, but eventually you guys will be, you know, 1,000, 1,500 strong, right?
It'll be bigger.
So, you know, what we use at our school is something called Zoho.com. And Zoho, for people out there who don't know, Zoho.com has a ton of online features from online word processing, online, you know, spreadsheets, online presentations, online CRM. I mean, they have a tremendous amount of features. I mean, I can't even go through all of them. But one of the ones that they have is called Zoho Desk, and it's free as long as up to 6 agents. So as long as 6 people or less are accessing or actual agents, people who are actually completing IT tasks, you can make that for your school. And I find that works pretty well. And again, it's free. It's completely free, and it's a bit of a pain to set up because you have to really kind of think through it of what you want to do. And of course the setup, the implementation is not the most obvious on Zoho, but it works really well and it gives us good reports at the end of the month. And we can track those items and those reports. And we can actually go back to different vendors. For example, for our printers, we have one printer that breaks down quite a bit, and we can actually go back to our vendor and be like, here's what's happening. Here's what we have at the end of the year. As you can see, this printer has broken down more times than any other printer in our building. What can you guys do to help us resolve that? And so it just gives us good feedback. And I think that's another important thing with these support and these IT tickets is it gives the IT department really good feedback and able to track issues as they come up and kind of get in front of them.
Yeah, and the other thing too is a lot of people, and you and I have talked about this before, they make the mistake of using email. There's not a bigger mistake you can make. And I have a, you know, we had kind of, it's not really a problem, but like a lot of the Korean staff, they haven't worked anywhere with like tickets and stuff before, and they just want to use email. And I'm like, no, you don't want to do that, because you cannot keep up with the volume of email. And it only takes missing one important thing for it to cause a huge problem. Mm-hmm. So I kind of boiled down things to like these like basic rules, like depersonalize the process, divide and conquer, follow up often, and predict the future. So if you use forms and tickets, you can do all those things. There's no email, it's depersonalized. You collect the job and you assign it to the person who can do it best, not the person who is closest or the person that they like better. That is a mistake. Like, some of your people have skills that others don't. And what happens is end users just think, oh, I work in IT department, I can do, you know, they can do anything. It's like, no, we have limitations. So you need to, when possible, assign people to do the job, and they need to be the people who have the best chance of success. Follow up often. Like, if you can't fix something, you just need to let people know. If you can't fix it, we're working on it.
Yeah.
And then I put predict the future, but that's what you were just talking about. You collect the data, you can see what breaks down the most, and you need to address it. You don't keep letting it break down. You know, that's another whole conversation, but. So I just think when I see schools struggling with tech support or support in general, you know, first thing is, oh, we need tech support. And I talked about that in the beginning. Like, well, why do you need it? I mean, I firmly believe if you set up your classrooms and your equipment the correct way, there's very little that has to happen for tech support in the classroom until something literally burns out. You use projectors, they burn out. Maybe you have a TV and one day it just stops working like 10 years later. I don't know. But until something physically breaks, which isn't often, there's just not a lot of day-to-day support anymore unless you've planned something incredibly complicated. I knew this guy who was planning these elaborate classrooms, and in each classroom, he had like an audio video rack in a rack.
Oh, man.
And I was like, dude, you're going to put an AV rack in the room? He's like, yeah, we need it to power everything. I'm like, the teacher's going to have to run an audio video like rack with like 8 pieces of equipment in it. He's like, it's a small rack. And I was like, it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. I think you hit on something really early on. If teachers or people, anybody gets immediate feedback that, hey, here's where you are in this queue, you know, it lets people know that, hey, wow, okay, somebody is definitely going to address this. It's not going to get lost. It's not me just passing by. Like, we've had people who have passed by my school, and we're a small school, and they're like, oh, hey, I need this. Do you mind helping out? And we're like, okay, but we're busy that day. Printers breaking down, people looking up other emails, I don't know. And then we forget about it. And then they come back, and they're a little upset, and I have to explain to them, I was like, well, look, we have a protocol, and the protocol is if you put in a ticket, the reason why we have you put in a ticket is that we don't forget about it. We can't lose it. But if you just stop by and drop something, you know, just mention something, poke your head in our office and say, hey, by the way, I need this. We can easily forget about that because there's no record of it except in your mind in our nine. But if you put a ticket in or you put a form in, then boom, there is a record of it. And if we fail and drop the ball and don't resolve that, that's on us. And then you can definitely be angry at the ID department, definitely be angry that nothing was done. But certainly don't, you know, but that, you know, it's good. It, you know, it's just, it's impersonal. It puts, you know, ownership on both parties. I think it's good. I think it's important.
And like, also I find that, like, I'll just say like two more things. One, another reason you don't want to use email is people who are stressed out will write really, really long emails that usually have no information that's helpful. You need them to like go through a quick little process to narrow things down. Where are you located? Has this happened before? Choose from a list of things that closely relates to your problem. And if you don't see it, just click other.
Yep.
And if you click other, just type a quick description. And what that does is it slows them down, it makes them think a little bit, and it helps really focus them on the problem and not on their feelings about the problem.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is if you're working in a school outside of your home country, there's a really good chance the support people are from the country you're working in, and it's not really fair to hit them with your native language when you have a problem in like an overwhelming wave of language. So you need to like simplify stuff. So for example, on my support form, if you choose a problem, that problem comes up in English and Korean for the support people. So it's way faster. Anybody can work on it even if they don't speak English. But if you type a huge paragraph, someone's gonna have to interpret that.
Yeah, well, absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's not an issue here because everybody's speaking English at my school, but you're absolutely right. I've worked at, like in Dubai, for example, the tech support was Indian, 100% Indian. And they were even different cultures from within India as well.
Yep.
And had to learn how to work. Some of them didn't even speak the same native language. That's how vastly apart some of these people were, within India. Yep. And so, I mean, you got a tremendous amount of culture clash there that certainly needs, that most people, when they put in a ticket, don't even think about. But you definitely, that's very important. That's really good. That's really good. And that actually kind of leads us, Tony, you actually mentioned something about putting like an audio rack into a classroom. That leads us right into our very last topic. I can't believe, man, that was a great.
We're flying.
We are.
We're flat.
This is the Concorde 2.0, you know. Solution.
So what's going on, Patrick? This sounds like an ongoing issue that you're having.
It is. So, okay, we're a small school, and long ago they decided that they wanted their teachers to be wirelessly connected to the projectors. Okay.
Yes.
So what they did. Yeah. So what they did is there are expensive solutions out there, like the Barco one click. That is a very expensive solution.
It's expensive.
Now, the cheapest solution at the time, and it may still very well be the cheapest solution out there, is an Apple TV. You plug it right into the projector, and you can connect wirelessly to it.
Correct.
But the problem is there's no way to get the sound from the projector to external speakers. This is a problem. So what we have in our classrooms is kind of like a small audio rack. It's ridiculous. We have a receiver, a multimedia receiver, an AV receiver, that usually runs several hundred dollars. Onkyo, Sony, Technics, there's a bunch of them out there. And then we plug the Apple TV into that, and from that it runs to the projector. And then for the video only to the projector, and then the audio runs to these mounted speakers in every classroom. So we have a DVD VCR combo, an Apple TV, and this giant receiver mounted to the wall that runs to all of these things. Right? It's awful. It's terrible. And in 2018, there are better solutions out there, and we're looking at some of them. But a lot of these solutions, they're like, oh yeah, you just hit this button on this wall and it's going to work. And so the question I follow up with is, that's awesome. How can we support this? How can we, the IT department, if something goes wrong, how can we fix this? And their answer, invariably, and we've talked to three different vendors, and there is all the same. You don't fix it. You call us and we fix it. I'm like, okay, great. How much is that going to charge us? How much are you going to charge us per hour? And they're like, oh, well, we're going to charge you anywhere from $120 per hour, some vendors, to $300 an hour.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And or crazy. Well, the $300 one, it wasn't per hour. It's like per visit. They're like, we're just going to give you, you know. And they said, if it takes us 3 days, it'll be $300 and you'll be saving money. I'm like, well, if it, you know, but, and so what we have right now is very impractical. It's really messy. There's cables everywhere. It looks like junk. It doesn't work all the time because Apple TV is not as reliable as everybody wants it to believe.
It reboots all the time.
It reboots all the time, disconnects all the time. There's lag sometimes. There's
no central management.
No, there's no central management at all. There's none. So I can't even log in and say update different Apple TV. So we have some Apple TVs that are way out of date. We never updated them. We have some that have been updated, but still they don't work properly. They don't show up in our. It's kind of a mess. And so we are looking at a more networked, elegant solution. But those elegant solutions require technical support off campus. And Tony, I'm wondering, and I don't have any answer here, but I'm wondering, is it worth that money to pay for something like Barco, where it's very expensive, but really
easy to service.
You have all the power to service it. And if not, then you have lots of people at your back who will help you service it, or to pay for some of these proprietary things. And I'm looking at Extron panels
those are so expensive.
They're crazy. So for people who aren't sure, there are these little panels that sit in the wall, and then all of the hardware and all of the magic, quote unquote magic, that happens is usually stored up in the ceiling or in like a wall nearby. And there's usually, for all of these, Crestron or Extron, there's a black box, and it's literally a black box or a white box, it doesn't matter, but it has their controller in there, and there's nothing that you can do about it. You can't go in and fix it. You can't go in and service it. You can't go in and really do anything except maybe look at it. But those are expensive, but they offer this, hey, It's going to work. It's just going to work. And I'm wondering, Tony, what would you suggest for schools to do? Should they go with some messy alternative that they can manage, or would you go with a more expensive but
the main issue when I look at it here is that we're still using projectors, number one. Like, if you have larger TVs or screens with embedded operating systems, this gets a little bit easier because you actually they usually have some kind of built-in screen Wi-Fi sharing capability, and you can do your audio over Bluetooth to any kind of Bluetooth speaker you purchase. Right?
Yeah, that's true.
So,
that's true.
But when you use projection, you've got all these issues because projectors are on the ceiling. And even with a Barco, you've got to really plan it because there's no extra power on most projectors. You can't just put a box on top of them easily. And I've also found with projection another problem with some of these systems. The audio and video can go out of sync easily if you start running the audio through some kind of receiver.
So, yeah. And we've seen that with our Apple TVs.
I would say, like, definitely I would say that you have to go for ease of use. And I've used Xtron and Crestron and all those things. And they work, but they also have to be serviced, like, I would say fairly regularly. I don't know. Those panels, teachers can beat those panels to death. Like, any number of things can happen.
Yeah.
So I do like, and I think I sent you a link for something else that we just saw.
You did. AirTame.
It's not available here. That actually looked pretty good. I mean, I like this concept of something like a Chrome stick, Chromecast.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's a tough one. So what we're gonna do next year is they put these speakers in our ceiling, and the speakers were actually supposed to be Bluetooth. And to use them, we're supposed to run through a receiver like you have. So we immediately said no, and we removed all the receivers. Just no, we're not using them.
Yeah.
So we're going to convert those. They actually are convertible to Bluetooth. So those are going to be Bluetooth. So the teacher's audio will just go from the laptop Bluetooth up. And then for projection, they're just going to either use an HDMI cable, or if they want, we do have the Barco available for some people. So that's how we're going to do it. We're just going to base it around Bluetooth. But, you know, most teachers still prefer, like, if sometimes, again, with wireless video and the audio, if it goes out of sync, they get really annoyed. So a lot of them will be like, no, I don't want that to happen. Or Apple TV, like, one restart, I don't want to do it again. So then they just want to be on the cable.
Yeah.
So yeah. I would say if anybody's starting over, and actually I would have liked to have done this, but unfortunately it was one of the IT things I didn't get to plan. It was planned before I was hired in terms of, like, what the fitting was going to be in the classroom. I wouldn't have gone with projection. I wouldn't have. I would have gone with flat screens. So, I would have gotten Samsung screens with embedded windows in them, because you can transmit to those things with most computers wirelessly, or you can get something to do it, like some kind of little adapter will transmit.
Or even an Apple TV. I mean, if your teachers have Macs, right, you could
plug,
because it plugs directly into the TV.
Those large screens have audio management capability, so you've got a lot of options.
You could put a sound bar on them. You could put speakers on the side. Yeah. So here's what I've run into with that. Is some teachers
hold on just a second.
Yeah,
mark this, because I got to yell at the kids. Hold on.
All right, go yell. Tony's going to yell, everybody.
Jane, close the door. You guys are way too, listen, you're way too loud.
Ladies and gentlemen of IT Babble, we are leaving this in because this shows you how awesome and that we are real educators. We're not just pretend educators. There's real kids out there being noisy.
Who's finished? Okay, I'm going to put your feedback form on Edmodo in just a minute. I want you to keep your voices down. Okay, just calm down. All right? Your feedback form will take you about 30 minutes to do. So get your computers out and get ready. Just give me a minute.
There they go. There they are.
Okay, I'm back.
All right, sorry. We'll wrap things up here. I just want to quickly say a concern that teachers have expressed to me is if they get rid of the projector, because right now the projector, they have a screen that they pull down, and then behind the screen is a regular whiteboard, and they don't want to give up the regular whiteboard because the regular whiteboard always works. There's nothing that you plug into it. You just have to have markers for that thing. Yeah. And they're like, and they're and rightfully so, a little nervous about giving that wall space up. So,
and that makes sense, and I understand that, but I just feel like, I don't know. I just feel like I don't know, maybe it's about age of students. Some of these screens now go on really lightweight stands. They can roll around the room. We have some teachers. We do have some smart screens that kind of came with the school. Like, again, I didn't order them, and we don't really have a big plan for them right now because they require really expensive software. But some teachers took them, and they're just using the smart screens for playback and then using their whiteboards. And all they've done is put the smart screen at a 45-degree angle from their whiteboards, and the students really like it. So
that's a good idea, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, they can move the screen around wherever they want, but they kind of keep it in relation to the whiteboard so that your content, your static content's on the whiteboard, and the stuff that you're changing is on the screen. So I know there's a lot of limitations, but if you're going to put projection in too, I guess the other thing is run extra power up there close to the projector so you can put devices that support the projector at the projector.
That's an excellent point. And for people out there,
with the Barco,
go ahead.
To use the Barco right now, I have to dock it. Like, the Barco is kind of affixed to the wall where you normally would plug your computer in.
Yeah.
It would be way better if the Barco was on like a 0.5 meter HDMI cable going right into the projector. It would be so much nicer.
It would be, yeah. Yeah.
But there's no power. I will have to run power for each projector, like an additional power outlet.
And another thing for people out there, if you are going to stick with projection, don't buy any bulb projectors anymore. Start buying laser projectors. They're more expensive, but you don't have to change the bulb. And the hours, the predicted hour use, even if it's half of what they predict, which is around 15,000 to 20,000 hours, that's going to give you 10 years of life. And they're not supposed to dim because it's a laser. They're supposed to stay relatively the same brightness, not as noisy, nowhere near as heat, on in like 10 seconds, off almost immediately. It's definitely worth the extra. Casio has them for under $1,000. In just a couple years, Epson, Sony, they're all going to follow suit, and they'll be under $1,000 as well.
Agreed.
Yeah, so definitely don't just go out there and look at Epson, and don't let somebody say, oh, here, look at this one. This is $400. Oh, yeah, it has a bulb, but the bulbs are $100 if you buy them direct, or $100 to $120 each, if not more. So,
right.
Yeah.
All right, well, I've got to get off here, Patrick.
Absolutely. You got a class. Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I will see you next week.
Absolutely. And for you out there, keep on babbling, and we will catch you on the next podcast. For IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And we will see you soon. Bye-bye.